Was there a reason that people with disabilities in particular were chosen to bear the cost of these hospital cuts?
No, not at all.
They were chosen, right? So the question then is,
but
how come it's them?
Hospitals are in the business of providing acute care. Mm-hmm. We've got to ensure that we can do that.
I guess it's especially tough when these people actually end up in the hospital because they have no access to ambulatory care, and particularly when they end up in emergency. Do you have any idea what it costs to service a patient in an emergency visit?
It costs certainly a lot more than it would in the ambulatory care setting.
Where did these patients go now that the clinic is closed?
There's some community supports that they can still have. Public health does provide some services. CCAC does provide some services. Patients could contact CCAC and see whether they qualify for those services or not. Same thing with public health. They could also contact the public health department, see what sort of services they provide.
Not necessarily services for COPD, though.
Not necessarily.
Welcome to Disrespect, exploring the stigma around disability, providing information and interviews to entertain and challenge listeners who care about, or care for, or may themselves have become someone with a disability. Disrespect welcomes three commentators on the closure last year of Joseph Brandt's COPD clinic in response to Liberal budget cuts the prior year. COPD stands for Chronic Obstructive Pulmonary Disease, a degenerative and terminal deterioration of the lungs. Disrespect sought comment from the Health Ministry, the Premier's Office, and local Ancaster Dundas Flamborough Liberal MPP Ted McMeekin. Neither the Health Ministry nor the Premier's Office could talk to us when we called. Ted McMeekin was honest enough to admit he wasn't going to comment on something he didn't know about. We have a commentator from the Ontario Hospital Association, one from Joseph Brandt itself, and Burlington Conservative MPP Cam Jackson. Listen up with Disrespect.
Disrespect welcomes to the show Beverly John from Joseph Brandt Hospital, the Vice President of Patient Care Services and the Chief Nurse Executive. Beverly, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Jeff.
I'm calling about the closure of the COPD program at Joe Brandt, which Joe Brandt has indicated is required to comply with new Liberal legislation requiring balanced hospital budgets.
That's correct. We had to make some really tough choices in terms of what services could we no longer provide.
I'm curious how long it took to reach this decision and how long the staff had to know of it and how long the patients had.
This information went to the ministry within the past 3 months.
So with the closure of the program at the end of March, you'd say sometime in February or sometime?
Very likely.
And then the ministry had to approve it? The patients only got notice of it in the middle of March. Why were the patients notified a month later than the ministry?
It took some time in terms of us getting the communication out.
Mm-hmm.
It very likely was due to the business of the organization. We have processes, too, in terms of when the staff are notified, when the patients are notified. And in fact, I believe that they were notified sometime around about the beginning of March, Jeff.
Where I was, we got a notification, and it was just about the middle of March when it came in the mail. When did the workers get notified?
The workers would have been notified sometime in February also.
Okay.
Yeah.
So prior to the notification of the patients?
No, just around about the same time.
Well, the patients were notified in the middle of March, so the workers were notified in February.
You received that in March, you're saying?
The middle of March, yeah.
The middle of March, and was it mailed out to you?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, it would have been posted in the clinic prior to that.
Mm-hmm. Not long, because it would have been posted in Burlington, and it was received in Burlington.
Yes, but it would have been posted in a clinic likely before you received it in the mail.
Well, certainly not after. What other programs for people with disabilities were closed?
The lipid clinic. That's for people with high cholesterol.
Heart disease, mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay.
That was also closed.
I thought that category, cardiac care category, was like a verboten category for closures, but apparently the lipid clinic falls outside that.
It was a lot of education, actually.
And, okay.
And we're certainly hoping that some of the education will still continue. Perhaps a little bit more will be given by the inpatient nurses before the patient's discharged.
Was there a reason that people with disabilities in particular were chosen to bear the cost of these hospital cuts?
No, not at all.
They were chosen, right? So the question then is, but how come it's them?
Hospitals are in the business of providing acute care.
Mm-hmm.
We've got to ensure that we can do that.
I guess it's especially tough when these people actually end up in the hospital because they have no access to ambulatory care, and particularly when they end up in emergency. Do you have any idea what it costs to service a patient in an emergency visit?
Certainly a lot more than it would in the ambulatory care setting.
Where did these patients go now that the clinic is closed?
There's some community supports that they can still have. Public health does provide some services. CCAC does provide some services. Patients could contact CCAC and see whether they qualify for those services or not. Same thing with public health. They could also contact the public health department, see what sort of services they provide.
Not necessarily services for COPD, though.
Not necessarily, but maybe there's an adjunctive type treatment or service that's provided that would help.
So really, these patients are the people who fall between the cracks now. We don't know whether there's any other services for them. We don't have the money in Ontario to provide for them. And as people with disabilities, they're not central to the hospital's mandate. They're not central to CCAC's or public health's mandate. They're really almost forgotten then, now that the clinic's closed.
I would hope and trust that they've still got a family physician that's going to be following them up.
That's a good question. In Burlington, they're very short supply, but okay.
The training and teaching that the patients have received, they can continue to practice that at home,
mm-hmm.
to ensure that they're still trying to achieve some optimum quality to their health.
You're right. What the people who have had the privilege of attending the clinic are is a lasting benefit. I guess our concern is for the people who need that clinic now that it's gone. Well, thank you for your time today, Beverly. Is there anything that you'd like to add?
Certainly, it was a very tough choice to us. It's difficult because certainly we would like to be able to provide as much service as we possibly can, but in today's economic environment, unfortunately, we can't.
I appreciate your contribution today. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
On Disrespect, I welcome Steve Orsini, Vice President of Policy and Public Affairs for the Ontario Hospital Association. Steve, welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you very much. My pleasure.
I'm calling today because of a concern we have with the hospital's response to the budget they've been given. It started with a notice from the local Joseph Brant Memorial Hospital COPD program. What's the situation across Ontario with the budget and these discretionary, it seems, discretionary hospital programs, Steve?
What Joseph Brant's faced with, they're not alone. The hospitals in Ontario are funded among the lowest in the country on a per capita basis. Last year, the Ontario budget committed to a three-year, multi-year funding plan.
So that's what's on the table right now.
Yes,
that's
exactly.
what we're looking at for the next 3 years. They submitted this plan for cutting programs, including this particular program as an example, sometime last fall. When did they get approval?
By the end of December.
Okay. And when were these program cuts finally decided on?
Around the same time.
Given that the hospital was notified that their cuts were approved in December, it's kind of odd they would wait until the middle of March to notify people of a program ending on April 1st. They've indicated they're working with the Community Care Access Center and Public Health to find other ways to deliver services to COPD patients.
When they shut down these programs and the services aren't there, they'll end up in the emergency department and we're back at this whole game all over again. Sometimes patients will have to wait longer, and it's not a continuum of care that if it was organized as a program, they would be better treated and coordinated.
Do you know what notice the hospital has to give to the workers that they lay off when they discontinue this program?
3 to 4 months might be typical. It could be less, it could be slightly more.
The patients only got 2 weeks' notice with Easter coming in the middle of the 2 weeks, so in effect, they got about 9 days' notice of the cancellation of the program.
Funding came late. The hospitals had to qualify for the service reductions, mm-hmm. and they had to give notice. That was announced on January 17th. The applications didn't go out until a few weeks later.
Right, February.
The due date for receiving the applications was early March.
What you're saying is these people may have been severed, and their severance, rather than being given in the form of notice, they might have been paid out.
I'm not sure the specifics of this particular case that you're referring to, but it varies by collective agreement.
Well, we're really concerned because the effect is province-wide. This is the only example I'm familiar with. The only way I can see that the hospital would not know of the cancellation of this program before they informed the patients was if they actually severed the staff or many of the staff who were involved instead of giving them notice, because the notice period to the staff and the notice period to the patients, the two aren't equal. I understand that the COPD program had a lot of brand new equipment, and you mentioned that they got funding for equipment. Was that last year?
Well, I don't know the particular circumstances on this issue. The demand for the latest technology, the demand for employees, demand for skilled healthcare workers are so high that we believe that whoever's in the system will find a place somewhere else in the system.
Oh, including the equipment, too.
I don't know that these
specifics but you think in general equipment finds a home?
Absolutely. The government must provide transitional funding to maintain those services until the alternatives are in place.
What word have you heard of transitional services? Because apparently their awareness is that there is none.
There's some assessment in the Ministry Regional Office, and I don't know the specifics of this case.
We're aware of that.
There's sufficient services available to assume those hospital services, or else they wouldn't have been approved for a reduction.
Is there any reason why, in this case, for instance, Joseph Brandt seems to have targeted a group of patients with a degenerative disability, in effect terminally ill patients, for program cuts?
Under the accountability agreements and balanced budget plan directives they received last fall, the agreements protected only 5 or half a dozen or so services.
What were they?
They're the wait time services and a number of other ones. So the areas around cancer, cardiac,
right.
Hip and knees, MRI tests.
They're protected.
They will not be cut. Those are the ones that hospitals have to continue to maintain their volumes.
Right.
But there's a whole raft of other programs and services that were not on the protected program list. When hospitals were faced with two different programs, both equally important, but one's on a protected list and one isn't, it forces hospitals to look to the ones that are not protected.
So you're saying that some people rate first-class response and some people end up in eMERGE?
Cancer treatment has to be a priority.
Yep.
Cardiac services have to be a priority. After those priorities, the rest are less of a priority or a priority not now.
If our listeners are interested in the impact of the proposed cuts and the potential impact of transitional funding or an increase in transfers to Ontario, where could they go for more information on what programs have been cut, or is this something that's not disclosed around the province?
www.fundingfacts.com.
At fundingfacts.com, can visitors find out about discrete program cuts at each hospital?
We may not be able to provide it by type of service, by type of community, but we'll be tracking at the provincial level trends, whether the trends are in particular areas or in particular regions or by type of hospital. And I think that type of information will be very important to the public as they're trying to grapple with understanding what's happening to the healthcare system around them.
Perhaps, though, not type of care.
Well, it's be very complex for us to be able to specify the type of care in each community.
All right, Steve, I really appreciate your time to go through this.
Thank you for your time. I do appreciate your questioning.
Thanks, Steve.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And now we'll take a short break with the blues. And now, back to our interview in progress.
Disrespect welcomes Cam Jackson, the MPP for Burlington. Welcome, Cam.
Thank you, Jeff.
You had some interesting points of view on the closure of the COPD program as an example of forces set in motion by the Liberal budget.
The province doesn't own the hospitals. They're independent institutions. And unfortunately, hospitals are particularly troublesome. We're seeing an unprecedented number of program closures across the province, and the next wave is consolidation of services. You won't have as many choices to go to various hospitals for various treatments. Those are the kinds of management trends that the government is forcing when it doesn't provide adequate funding to meet current demand.
They'd probably point to those trends and say, well, this is economy, this is efficiency, this is the wave of the future, would they?
The real reason, they say, is that healthcare is rising as too great a part of the overall provincial budget, and that's true. It's growing faster, but if you analyze internally, hospitals aren't really the biggest culprit. The drug plan is perhaps the most severe. It's growing 8 to 10% each year, so it's now up around $2.7, $2.8 billion, and we don't get a single penny from the federal government because the drug plan is not covered under the Canada Health Act.
What I'm hearing is that the provincial government has drawn a hard line because they're short of health care expansion funds.
Correct.
But in fact, the health care expansion funds are not going to the hospitals where they've drawn the hard line. They're going to the drug plan.
They're going to other areas. There's no question. If you were to say, where is McGuinty spending the $2.4 billion that he picked up extra this year from the health tax? First of all, not 100% of it's going into health care. Some of that money's already gone into Ministry of Tourism exercise programs. They argue that by building new sewer lines and providing healthier water and cleaner water, that is a health expenditure. Well, by definition, everything is a health expenditure. A new highway is good for your health if it saves your life over a very dangerous highway. But the bottom line is the government wants dollars to expand other services, and they want to rein in the hospitals. And George Smitherman, the health minister, has been very clear he wants to transform the health care system. But there's just so many older people living longer. 25 years ago, we didn't expect our parents to need more than one new hip or one new knee.
That's true. Our generation
is going to go through two, maybe three knee surgeries and two, maybe three hip surgeries because we're living longer.
The definition of hospitals I found a little elusive, too.
Because there are so few family doctors in Ontario, people are using their hospitals as their drop-in clinics. We're not attracting enough doctors because we don't pay our doctors as well. Right here in our own community of Hamilton, we read in the Spectator that the doctors in the emergency department at Hamilton Health Sciences are saying that they're going to quit or they're going to have to shut down one of the emergency departments because they can't handle the workload. Well, in the new OMA agreement, doctors cannot be paid from hospital budgets. They have to be paid by OHIP. What you're seeing in Hamilton and other cities is doctors saying, look, I want to be able to work my reasonable hours and still make a good wage. They're arguing that they'd like to increase their wage as much as they want to increase their hours. The government's trying to manage some of the cost drivers.
And redirect the doctors to private practice, is that it?
That's the other agenda. The other agenda is to create family clinics where doctors practice in groups and bring in nurse practitioners so that they can spread the workload so that when someone shows up in a group practice, they'll always have a doctor, always have a nurse, always have maybe a social worker can assist them with some of the mental health related issues that sometimes crop into your health needs. So changing the way healthcare is delivered has been on every government's agenda for the last 15 years. This government seems very determined to accelerate that.
Right.
And in the process, they've got to take money from other areas of healthcare to fund it and drive it. And that's where hospitals are getting caught in the crossfire. Why restricting drugs onto the drug plan are getting caught in the crossfire. Government is saying that you have to go to a cheaper drug that's either a generic or one that has a comparable chemical composition, not an identical drug. That means an older drug or one that's close to the same. Reference-based pricing is a means of controlling cost and reducing costs, but there are health consequences to it.
So how does it all boil down to a wealthy community like Burlington telling me that they're being forced to close a clinic like the COPD clinic because it's ambulatory, when that means that people will have to go to emergency, which is more expensive?
The government seems to be imposing a plan without really sharing all the details.
Okay.
There's consequences to that, and those consequences are that hospitals will make decisions about cutting programs, which the government doesn't want to be on the record as saying, yes, they want to be able to say, we didn't ask you to cut. The hospitals found out what their final budget amounts were for their fiscal year 2 months before the end of the fiscal year. You can't run a business with that kind of planning. We certainly can improve on that.
You've mentioned that seniors are really adversely affected by this whole process of late notice, last minute cuts. How do people with disabilities fit into this?
People with disabilities generally get caught in the crossfire because the income support is meager at best. And the services that they need. It's one thing to talk about access to a doctor, but if you can't get transportation to get to a doctor, the disability community is disadvantaged right from the beginning. The disability community are totally unable to cope with these kinds of shifts.
Thanks, Ken.
Thank you very much. I've appreciated our time together, Jeff.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Disrespect began almost 5 years ago with a question one winter night to journalist Scott Nye, if I could read on his radio show. I drew on memories of being read to as a child and an appreciation of music instilled by a mother, a music teacher who taught young children the foundations of music, and pianists the nuances of the almost forgotten Leshtisky method for a sum of over 60 years. At Joseph Brandt Hospital, her hospital, the COPD clinic was perhaps the only program which could have improved the quality of her life and perhaps lengthened it. Its cancellation disheartened her. When the show came on, she would ask me to remind her so that she could listen to it and enjoy the piano blues that were always a feature of the show. St. Patrick's Day. This daughter of English women and Scots men from the time of William the Conqueror. Not a drop of Irish blood in her, but a great deal of Celtic spirit was buried. Thank you. You've been listening to Scott Cushney from Two Pianos, No Waiting. In the middle of the show, This Old Train. And at the end of the show, Bags Grove. Disrespect was digitally edited from live telephone and studio interviews.